A little bit of breaking news for you here, Duke fans. Welcome to the latest edition, episode number 527 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. You know, it's kind of crazy. Sometimes you have those days in the summertime when nothing's happening. Sometimes there are weeks where nothing's happening. And then sometimes you have a day like today where in the span of just a few hours, we got two pretty significant pieces of news about the Duke basketball team. One involving the players and name, image, and likeness, and the other involving the Duke coaching staff. Before we get into those pieces of news, time for introductions, because after 527 of these, there's no way you know who's talking to you, right?
Who am I?
I'm Jason Evans, here for your listening enjoyment. I am joined, as I almost always am, by Donald Wine. Donald, I'll let you do the honors of telling everyone, where in the world is Donald Wine today?
Well, first of all, kia ora, which is how they say hello here in Auckland, New Zealand, where I am for the Women's World Cup. I had to fly 47 hours, Jason, 47 hours of travel to get from D.C. Wellington.
Was that an exaggeration, or was it literally? Because if it's 47 hours, I got to hear how it happened.
No. Okay. So I left my apartment in D.C. on Monday morning at 4 a.m. to get to Baltimore to fly to LAX. I had a 12-hour layover at LAX because for some reason United wouldn't get me a later flight. So I had to stay at LAX for 12 hours. LAX to Sydney, which is about 16 hours of flight, a 5-hour layover there. Then from Sydney to Auckland, basically rushed between two terminals to catch a flight from Auckland to Wellington, which is where the U.S. women played Netherlands yesterday. And so I arrived the night before that game, 47 hours after I left my door in D.C. So if you're asking what day it is, apparently it's Friday. It's great reason we have phones for that. But Jason, I think this is the first time we've had, you know, episodes that have started on one day and ended on the other. We've recorded around midnight. You and I and Sam have been in different places and different time zones. But I think this is the first time that we can say that this is being recorded on 2 days at the same time.
Right. It is Thursday evening in Atlanta, Georgia, on the East Coast of the United States. And it is Friday morning in New Zealand. All right, Donald, enough of us chattering a little bit about Women's World Cup, which is really cool and really fun. And I enjoyed the game. And you are one of the great, great soccer fans of the women's and men's national teams. So we love what you're doing out there. But let's get to the Duke news. And the Duke news is this. We have all heard about this event that Duke was planning in Chicago, a name, image, and likeness connected event where the Duke basketball team was going to Chicago for other activities. And while they were there, the team would spend some time and have a special NIL connected event where Duke fans could spend $2,500. It was a pricey ticket, $2,500. And as a result, they could watch the team do a special scrimmage. There was also like dinner and drinks connected with it. There'd be a lot of socializing with members of the team. It is worth noting that the coaching staff would not be there for the event. That this, like, my bet is they probably weren't allowed to wear Duke jerseys and stuff. You know, there's all kinds of stuff to sort of separate the university from this NIL event, separate the coaching staff and representatives of Duke from this NIL event. Well, we just got word literally in the past hour or so that the event has been called off because the NCAA said that this was improper, that it wasn't organized in the right way or something like that. Now, I'm going to go first on this because I'm going to tell you that I've spoken to sources close to the team. I'm not going to get into details of who they are, but these are people who know what's going on with the team. And what I've been told is that players have not been given a good explanation for why this happened, that there's a lot of frustration and maybe even a little bit of anger. We heard there was an article in Forbes magazine, or I guess Forbes Online, where a reporter was able to speak to John Shire a little bit about this event. This happened prior to it being canceled. And what we'd heard was that about 50 tickets had been sold, and that comes to revenue of around $125,000. Now, not all that revenue was going to go to Duke. I'm sure there were expenses connected to this, but my bet is that the players were looking at $5,000, $7,000, maybe as much as $10,000 each, probably like in the $5,000 to $7,000 range for each and every player on the team. They will now not be getting that money. and that's got to frustrate them and make them angry. It is easy, I think, for us to think of the stars and how much money they probably make off of name, image, and likeness. I'm sure that Kyle Filipowski and Tyrese Proctor and Jeremy Roach and on, that the guys who are the major players for Duke are all doing quite nicely from various deals that they cut with companies and individuals and the such connected to NIL. But there are players on this Duke team where the $5,000, $7,000, whatever they were going to get from this was a significant payday and would really matter to them. And it really sucks that the NCAA has blocked this, has prevented them from doing it. In a minute, I'll get into why I think the NCAA may have stepped up here and done something. But Donald, why don't you go ahead, talk about it a little bit yourself. And again, my sources just say that Duke is frustrated and doesn't know why.
And they should be, because there's no good reason or explanation for this. And this, Jason, we've talked about NIL for what, the last 2-3 years now, and how basically the NCAA was forced into creating, quote, a Wild West because they didn't do anything. The legislatures from several states decided to make this a reality, and the NCAA was kind of like, okay, sounds good. You guys go forth with it. And now it seems like they're coming up with stuff on the fly, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the specifics from the NCAA side. But I'll say this, you mentioned a lot of what I was going to say in the fact that this was a prime opportunity, not necessarily for the stars, but for those guys that are further down the bench who put in the work, the same work as some of the stars do, but don't get a lot of the credit, don't get a lot of the playing time, who don't have a lot of the notoriety. I also think that it's funny, Jason, this morning, for me, this morning, you know, this afternoon for you, we were just talking about how we were going to talk this weekend about the event and the, you know, how it was being put together, and that Forbes article that you mentioned. In the span of like 20 minutes, it went from that to, oh, we got to talk about this event not happening anymore. That's how quickly this came about. And I think it's really, it sucks for the fans who paid the money to go to attend this event. It sucks for the players who, you know, of course, we talk about how, you know, we have Rachel Baker and how, you know, Duke has been, you know, lockstep in making sure everything that they do is above board. And this event was above board. Everything about it was done the right way. And I don't know where the NCAA has the rationale to say that this is, quote, an impermissible benefit, when any of these, I mean, these guys can do this all the time. And this was even not done through Duke, right? It was done through the NIL site that the player set up called the brotherhood.live, where you can get shirts and stuff from them. They set this up through that website and not through Duke Athletics. So
they had to.
And you mentioned like they would probably, you know, have generic, you know, jerseys on, blue, white, whatever, but they wouldn't say Duke on them. Anything that would make it that it seemed like it was a Duke event as opposed to a players putting this thing on and people showing up thing. I'm very curious to see how this resonates, because I know a lot of colleges, a lot of programs, and especially a lot of the players from other programs, we're looking at this as kind of saying, oh, this might be a blueprint for how we can do something similar for our players. And now they're probably going to the NCAA saying, yo, what was wrong with this? Because we were going to set up something similar as well. Duke was leading the way in some of these areas. And now the players, it feels like, you know, the frustration is warranted. They're back at square one. We're back at, you know, the NCAA, you know, penalizing one team for this and not penalizing another team for doing the same thing. There's no rule set. And now the pressure has to go back to the NCAA and say, hey, if this is bad for you, then you need to figure out what is and what isn't good, right? Like, you have to figure this out, because you've gone so long with letting it be a Wild West. You can't now step in and say, whoa, 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 now we have to put in some rules. This was way too much. And it wasn't. I think that's the real thing here, is a lot of people were hurt in this, especially given the timing of it, because it was supposed to happen on Saturday, I want to say.
Yeah, so Saturday night. Yep.
The guys were leaving for Chicago tonight. So this is something that, you know, comes way out of left field, and without any explanation, I can understand why they're frustrated.
Yeah. So the article by Jeff Fedotin, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right, in Forbes, had a lot of interesting detail about what was going to be going on at this game and this weekend. He was the one who has the number of 50 people paying for this at $2,500 a pop. There, by the way, Jeff says that several former players, again, no coaches could be there, but several former Duke players were expected to be in attendance.
Jason, I should mention that no media was allowed at this as well. Exactly. This was something where even the sports information department was well removed from this, and they were saying, hey, we're not issuing credentials for this. The players aren't as well. This is strictly just for those fans who paid for tickets.
Yeah. And I think it was going to be a great event for those fans. I mean, admittedly, that's a very pricey ticket, but when you hear what people pay to attend a Taylor Swift concert and other, you know, high profile sporting events, you can understand there are people out there who can afford this. And if you're a Duke fan and you could afford this, this was going to be a really special night and an opportunity to connect with current players, former players in a way that probably isn't usually available to fans. And it's a real, real pity that it got canceled, because frankly, no one knows what the guidance on NIL is. No one knows where the line is that the NCAA has drawn or is drawing. And that's what makes it so frustrating. If you knew why the NCAA didn't like this event and has approved of other events, because there have been other somewhat similar events. You know, a team like North Carolina this year is going to do their blue-white game, and the ticket sales will go to the players. In fact, I think they did that last year as well. And this is really no different than that. It's just taking place in the summer as opposed to taking place, you know, in September or October. I suspect,
Jason, I can also, you know, this is not a similar instance, but like even just the gray area of NIL between the players and the university, right? We have certain, you know, there's certain universities who, you know, sell jerseys and they sell t-shirts and they sell, you know, all these things with players' names on the back, and they have a deal with the university. The players have a deal with the university so that the university can sell their jerseys with their names on the back and give them a cut. Duke doesn't even do this, because Duke is saying that is something that will not be, you know, above board when they start codifying all these things. But even that, right? Like, this was not set up by Duke. This was set up by the players. And you have instances where the university is setting things up on behalf of the players and it's being allowed where this isn't. So I think that's where, again, it adds to the frustration when you kind of see, you know, we're not even in column A or column B, we're in column C, and you're putting us under column A, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. If I had to bet, and I will admit now that I am blindly speculating, if I had to bet, I would say that the problem the NCAA probably had here was that Duke, the university, the basketball program, the athletic department had organized a trip for the team, a team building trip to go to Chicago. You know, among the information that we had in the article by Jeff Fedotin was that the team was going to be doing a lot of other stuff in addition to this event when they are there in Chicago, that they were going to spend a day along Lake Michigan at the beach, that they were going to do boating and stuff like that. He said they had a deep dish pizza outing. This is Chicago is, of course, the hometown of both Ryan Young and Jaden Shute. So I'm sure those guys were really looking forward to showing their favorite haunts and their favorite things around the city to the rest of the team. Additionally, there was supposed to be a event called the Brotherhood CEO program that they're going to be doing in Chicago, where former Duke alumni and executives were going to talk to the players about business, finance, branding, and the such like that. Probably a great chance for players to develop some contacts with people who might be useful as advisors or employers or whatever in future years. In any event, there was a lot of stuff connected to this weekend. And my bet is that the NCAA said, hang on, Duke, you're paying for the players to fly to Chicago. You're paying for them to stay in, I'm sure, a first-class hotel. And they just happen to be doing a basketball game in the city at the same time. My bet is the NCAA said, no. You can't pay all these expenses. Basically, Duke was paying almost all the expenses, with the exception of like the food and drink and rental of the facility. Duke was picking up everything else. And the NCAA probably said, no, you can't do all of that and have it be a NIL event that's not connected to the school. That's just speculation on my part, but that makes a little bit of sense in terms of what the NCAA is blocking. On the other hand, I think the NCAA, it's insane that they block any of this stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me.
And Jason, again, expanding on that speculation that you just had, if that's the case, then the NCAA just needs to say that, right? Like, hey, you can do this event, but you can't the school can't fly the players there. They can't have these other events associated with it. The players got to do it on their own. Because if they had known that, maybe this takes place, but not in Chicago, right? Maybe it takes place in DC, where we have, again, a lot of players are from. Maybe it takes place in Durham, but just not on Duke's campus, where there's an opportunity for the players to rent a gym out and say, hey, we're here. We're going to play this game and we're going to charge people to show up and have some access. Those are things that are, again, are approved by the, you know, by this name, image and likeness. And if the NCAA, the problem that Jason, you and I have, Sam will agree with us, like with the NCAA, is they like to say no without saying why. And this is an option where they say, hey, if you're going to deny something, you need to explain it so that people understand why you're making the move that you are. When you just say no without a lot of context, then people again create these gray areas of, okay, so, you know, that's why the rule book is 15,000 pages long, because you have all these gray areas that you yourself have created. So yeah, expand on the speculation. If they had just said, yo, this is fine, you just can't travel to it, then this would have happened in another way. But it doesn't sound like that was given to the players. And it seems like that's why, again, they're sitting here saying, what did we do wrong here?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Hey, look, we're going to take a quick break. We've spoken enough about this thing that we have very, very little info, and that, frankly, Duke has very little info about as well. When we come back from the break, Duke has a new assistant coach. It is not a name that anyone really thought was going to be out there. A really interesting choice by John Shire to be sitting next to him on the bench. That story in just a moment. All right, we're back from the break, and there is a new assistant coach at Duke. According to the reports, John Shire looked at Duke guys. Brendan Marks of The Athletic says that there was a serious vetting process that went on with some former Dukies, you know, some members of the Brotherhood who were very much considered for the open coaching position, the position that used to be held by Emile Jefferson on the Duke staff. This is a fairly senior position at Duke, because this is a guy who will be expected to go on the road and do recruiting for John Shire. And Shire chose not to go with a Duke guy, who went outside the family, so to speak, and picked Emmanuel Dildy, who was currently the associate head coach. He had just been promoted to associate head coach at Oklahoma. This is a guy who has a long history. He's 42 years old. He has been a coach since his mid-20s, and he has been at a lot of different programs. And, you know, Donald, before I get your reaction to it, I just want to go through the list of programs that Emmanuel Dildy has been at. And by the way, it is worth noting that Dildy is considered one of the top recruiters out there, you know, in the world of assistant coach recruiting. He started at a junior college in Chicago called Kennedy King College. He was assistant coach there for a couple of years. He was then head coach there for a couple of years. He then moved on to Eastern Illinois. That's his alma mater. That's where he played his college basketball. He was actually an All-Ohio Valley conference player when he was at Eastern Illinois, a very good player who then played professionally for a few years before becoming a head coach. So he was at Eastern Illinois for a few years. He was then at Loyola Chicago with Porter Moser. And that's significant, because he is credited with being the guy who recruited the players at Loyola who took that team to the Final Four. You know, I'm sure all of us remember just a few years back that Loyola made a Final Four, one of the biggest upsets among any team to ever make a Final Four. And Emmanuel Dildy is one of the guys who brought in those players. After Loyola, he was at Missouri, then Valparaiso. And then, and this is significant, he was at Northwestern for 3 years. So even though this is not a guy who is part of the Duke family, he absolutely knows Chris Collins and knows him really well. I'm sure John Shire spoke about Emmanuel Dildy extensively with Chris Collins before making this hire. What's more, while he was at Northwestern, Ryan Young was at Northwestern. I guarantee you that John Shire spoke to Ryan Young, his fifth-year senior. Actually, I think Ryan Young is technically a sixth-year senior. He spoke to Ryan Young about Emmanuel Dildy and what kind of a coach he is. And then, as I mentioned, Dildy was at Oklahoma, where he had just been promoted to associate head coach. He goes down to being, he takes a demotion, so to speak. He goes down to just being a assistant coach, not associate head coach at Duke, but obviously the Duke program, a step up from the Oklahoma program. No offense to Porter Moser at Oklahoma, but So Donald, give me your reaction to this. Another outsider coming into the Duke program.
And again, another elite recruiter, which if you think about it, also, Jason, you talked about his link with, you know, his Duke adjacent link being at Northwestern under Chris Collins. If I can remind people, Jay Lucas also was kind of Duke adjacent because his family grew up in Durham. And so he had at least a Durham connection, not necessarily Duke connection. So it's interesting that we have that, but also again, another elite recruiter, a guy who, Jason, you mentioned he played at Eastern Illinois. He actually transferred there from New Mexico State.
Right.
So he knows about the transfer portal. He knows how to navigate that. He can go after those kind of guys. He's played professionally. He played a couple of years in Germany. He can tell you about the trials and tribulations of trying to make it as a professional and what, again, he may not have made it to the NBA, but at least he knows what it takes to play professional basketball. And again, can impart that wisdom upon players. And again, every stop he has been known as the guy that's brought in, you know, some of the best recruits that school has seen to date. So I'm really looking forward to this. And also, it just goes to show you that John Shire is willing to look outside this program for fresh perspectives. He has been, you know, outspoken in, you know, again, elevating Jay Lucas after a year to associate head coach and in saying that his wisdom and his perspective has been a fresh look at things and how he can create this program and usually in take it to a level that even Duke has never seen before, taking those outside perspectives and making them his own and making that part of his legacy, I think is great. And, you know, even I know we love our Duke players, we love our former Duke players and them wanting to be a part of this program. I think there's going to be a lot of time for that. I also think, Jason, this is set up for continuity purposes. If you mentioned that Dildy is like 42 years old, so he's still a young guy, but he's not as young as John Shire, or Jay Lucas.
Well, I was going to say the great thing is he's the second oldest coach on the roster. That Chris Carwell's 45, he's 42, Shire's 35, Lucas is 32. Actually, I haven't looked it up. Will Avery's probably in his 40s. So
Will Avery's a little older than Carwell, yeah. or probably the same age as Carwell, so 45, yeah. 46. But I also think that's going to set up the continuity because I think, and we speculated in the last segment, I'm going to speculate again. Jay Lucas is not going to be here very long. He has been a guy that has been
on the head coaching track for sure. Yeah.
He's on the head coaching track and a lot of people are keeping their eyes on him. The fact that he's been such a defensive guru so far for us, that he's been an elite recruiter for us. Those are two things that everyone wants in a head coach. And he is probably going to be gone from Durham in the next couple of years. I'm not going to say after this season or after next season, but people have their eyes on him. And Dildy is a way to keep that continuity going while, again, having that outside fresh perspective if by chance Jay Lucas decides to take his talents to become a head coach somewhere else. So I think this is a great move. I'm looking forward to see what he can do. And again, for me, the recruiting thing is bigger than everything, right? The fact that we have a bunch of guys on this staff who can recruit their tails off and get in, you know, bring in elite talent. That's what I'm looking for. I think that's what a lot of Duke fans are looking for.
Yeah. I think it's an exciting hire because it is John Shire again, going outside the family and looking for, you know, who he can pluck from the other top tier programs and make someone that, you know, Duke is very involved with and bring on board to enhance our program and enhance our profile. I like him going outside the family. It just feels to me like he's a guy who likes to bring in a lot of different opinions and hear from different people and hear different styles. And look, the reality is this is not an old staff. And this is someone who has been in coaching for more than a decade. So he brings a lot of experience to the job. And I think it's a really good hire, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it's gonna be great to see how he fits in with the rest of the staff. Like, of course, they all have their different, you know, responsibilities, and you know, for on the recruiting trail, you know, we have a lot of guys that we are targeting in the next couple of years, especially some key talents, right? We talked about Cooper Flagg, we've talked about the Boozer Twins, you know, some of the best players in college basketball. These guys, before they get to Duke, are used to recruiting talent, but not necessarily the elite top five, top 10 talent. How he fits in with that staff and how they get together to really mesh in and work on the recruiting trail together to land some of these talents that we are trying to bring to Durham. I think that's the first step. And it sounds like they are very excited about having him on board to, again, provide that perspective that could be the difference between some of these guys coming to Duke and going somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get to one last very quick item that just came up a couple of days ago. We got news that Duke has extended head football coach Mike Elko's contract through the 2029 season. Not at all surprising that Duke would want to lock Elko down for a couple extra years because his first season was ridiculously good, a 9-win season, being named Atlantic Coast Conference Coach of the Year. I think that definitely merits extending him. And there haven't been details of this contract released yet, Donald. I'm sure that Elko is getting some kind of a raise. Perhaps more significantly, it was announced that in addition to extending Elko and probably giving him a raise, Duke has committed to raise the salaries of the assistant coaches, the Duke coaching staff. I'm sure that's something that Mike Elko felt was really important to keep some continuity on that staff, to have guys happy with their role in the Duke program and sticking around. It probably helps Elko to bring in other coaches that he may be interested in. Nothing not to like about this. It is good to see Duke committing money to the football program, more money. They've been quite generous with it, but being even more is always better because football is what drives the bus in terms of conference realignment and conference money and all that other kind of stuff. So I'm thrilled with this. I also hope, Donald, I dearly hope that written into this new contract is some kind of buyout that would be paid to Duke in the event some bigger program, some program with even more money, some program that feels they can pry Mike Elko away, that if they come along and manage to convince him to leave, and I hope not. That is not what I desperately want that not to happen. But if it happens, I hope there's a buyout that allows Duke to get a little something as compensation for having this guy do so well in Durham.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. First of all, it's a great, great thing that we have Mike Elko here. I'm really, really excited. I think there's been a lot of excitement about the football program over the last 18 months. And even as Jason, we had that 9-win season that capped in the Military Bowl that we just absolutely destroyed UCF, right? Like the excitement around the program is there. We have a difficult season ahead of us with, or at least from a schedule standpoint, we have a lot of good teams coming to Durham this year that will give us a test. But I think that securing these guys' future, right, the coach and the coaching staff, and giving them at least that air of, hey, you are wanted here. We appreciate you being here. And here's a sign of that appreciation, at least in small part or maybe large part. We'll never know. But I think those sort of things allow that coaching staff to get settled in as we start training camp very, very soon to get ready for the new season. These guys can be locked in and say, we're ready to go. We're ready to commit all the way in. And like you said, Jason, this coaching staff is great. We've seen the progress that they've made so far. We've seen some of the successes they've had. And if another team wants to come in and try and take that away, hopefully Duke is left with something in the form of monetary contributions from that school. But congratulations to Coach Elko and the entire coaching staff. This is a very well-deserved raise for them, or at least extension. And I'm really happy that these guys will stay in Durham, hopefully, for the length of that contract, because if they are, Jason, conference realignment might have something to say. Duke might have something to say about the conference realignment if we continue to progress the way we have, because I think as we continue to elevate as a program, more eyeballs in the form of TV eyeballs will be centered on that program, and we're going to have a lot of big paydays because of it.
Well, yeah, and speaking of TV eyeballs, we are just barely a little bit more than a month. I think it's about five and a half weeks from the Blue Devils kicking off the season against Clemson on national television, a primetime game, a big opportunity for Mike Elko and the Blue Devils to tell the entire football world that this program, that last year, those 9 wins last year were not a fluke. And I'm super looking forward to that game and to the football season in general. All right, Donald, that's
Labor Day night. Day night. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us on this latest episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup. We had a lot of breaking news for you. If there is any more news, we will be back here to tell you all about it. For Sam, who couldn't be with us, for Donald, who's in New Zealand. Wow. I am Jason Evans. This has been episode number 500. And I forgot the number.
527.
527. Thank you. Of the Duke basketball roundup. Here's the Duke band. I didn't forget about them. They're here to play us out and take us home. Look at you in your hotel room. What a
good
view.
Good morning from the future.
Yeah, what day is it? Where it's Friday, right?
It's Friday here. Friday morning.
Thursday night here. Thursday evening, I should say. By the way, your audio is great. Your video is lagging a little bit. Not that it matters.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably hotel Wi-Fi.
Yep, exactly.
If it gets to a problem, I can always just shut off my video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. It's not a problem at all. Like it's just me noting the lip flap from.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm also, you know, it's the future, so you know.
Right.
The light takes a minute to catch up.
There's a delay coming from the future. Yeah, what stocks should I buy tomorrow? Come on.
the stock market has, oh, I guess it has opened up. We will see. I will let you know shortly. There, I think there was a I'm looking and there's like a video board off in the distance mm-hmm. from my hotel room, and I think it was flashing some of the
ticker, like, stock prices.
The ticker. Yeah, yeah. But I can't really see it right now because it's like rotating.
Right, right. What if you
do have a great view? I have a great view of Sky Tower, which is their big tower here in Auckland. I'm looking straight ahead of me from the hotel.
Did you go to the match yesterday? You were there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was at the match. That was in Wellington. I was in Wellington for like 24 hours and then flew back last night here to Auckland. And I'll be here in Auckland until the 4th.
Okay.
Then the 4th, I go to Sydney or Melbourne, depending on where the next game is.
Right. Now, how will you get tickets to the next game? Because you don't know.
I have them already. Tickets to both games, both possible games it could be.
And you'll just sell the other one.
Yeah.
Maybe you even make a profit.
Well, they don't allow you to profit.
Really?
It's FIFA's thing. Yeah, so you can only sell it for, I think you can only sell it for like 10% over face value, but they take 10%. So like the most you can get is your money back, which is fine with me. I'm not.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These tickets were $15. So I'm not stressing.
Really?
Yeah. All the tickets here have been super, super cheap. So I bought tickets not knowing which games I was even going to go to. And basically it's like, all right, if I buy a ticket to this game and I don't sell it, then my ticket was $15 plus $15 is still $30. Like,
right.
I can't get a $30 ticket for a game in America. So this is great.
Yeah. It's the cost of coffee.
not even. And then that's like, I mean, that's $10 US, like in New Zealand, it's like 15 or something. So I'm like looking at these prices. Like last night I had a glass of wine at the hotel and it was in American dollars, it was like $5.50. I'm like, oh, like in DC, a glass of wine is $15, not $5.